At the end of Brahma's day.
Idam.
This. Adhaya.
Taking together.
Shoyani.
Having gone down.
Having gone to lie down.
Having gone to lie down.
Ambasi.
Ambasi.
In the causal water.
Udanvataha.
Devastation.
Shishayisho.
Lying of the personality of Godhead. Narayana.
Anupranam.
Breathing.
Vivishe.
Entered into.
Antaha.
Within.
Aham.
I.
Vibho.
Of Lord Brahma.
Of Lord Brahma.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. At the end of the millennium, when the personality of Godhead, Lord Narayana, lay down within the water of devastation, Brahma began to enter into him, along with all creative elements, and I also entered through his breathing. Purport. Narada is known as the son of Brahma, and Lord Krishna is known as the son of Vasudeva. The personality of Godhead and his liberated devotee appear in the material world by the same process. As it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, the birth and activities of the Lord are all transcendental. Therefore, according to authorized opinion, the birth of Narada as the son of Brahma is also a transcendental pastime. His appearance and disappearance are practically on the same level as that of the Lord. The Lord and his devotee are therefore simultaneously one and different as spiritual entities. They belong to the same category of transcendence. So we've read the history, life history of Narada, who started very humbly as the son of a Shudrani, of an ordinary maidservant. But he's an eternal associate of the Lord. It was only a circumstantial situation that he was cursed to take that birth. He came down from a much higher position among the Gandharvas and other demigods in heaven. He was cursed to take birth on the earth as a son of a low-class woman. But he recovered by his natural devotional propensities and his pure devotion. He very quickly recovered his transcendental position. And now, at the end of the millennium, millennium here means Brahma's day. In the English language, the word is actually borrowed from the Greek language. No, I'm sorry, that's Latin. Millennium means 1,000 years. We just finished the second millennium, or is it the third millennium actually? 2001, 2005. This is just arbitrary calculation. We have our AD, Anno Domini, dating from Christ. In India they date from the supposed year of King Vikramaditya. Yeah, so it's everything 78 years. More, you know, you add 78, subtract 78 years, and you get the Vikrama error. Others date from some other time. We date from the beginning of Kali Yuga, 212 years BC, whatever, it's all relative. A millennium is not just 1,000 years, as it is in the English language. The real epics are the days of Brahma, which last hundreds of millions of years. This is called Kalpa. At the end of Brahma's day, the whole universe, at least the part of it that we are familiar with, is destroyed by fire, water, air, and life as we know it, except for life on the higher planets, where demigods and sages live, but their existence is so subtle we cannot perceive it anyway. As far as life as we know it, that's destroyed at the end of Brahma's day. The human race, the animals, the plants, they're all wiped out. And then they're brought back to life again. Life is not completely destroyed for good. It becomes dormant within the body of Brahma while he's sleeping. But it's a catastrophic event. We take it very seriously when great catastrophes happen. Just like 200,000 people were killed a few weeks ago by a big wave. Just a minor adjustment of the surface, the crust of the earth, a small earthquake, created this catastrophe. Imagine what it's like when forces of nature are set, unleashed, that destroy all life throughout the three planetary systems. Not just a few hundred thousand or a few hundred million people, but all life is wiped out. That's a major catastrophe. And it happens at the end of each day of Brahma. Just like we go to sleep at night. Our activities are finished for the day. And we get up in the morning and start again. So for Brahma, it's just going to sleep at night. But for us, tiny creatures, it's the end of everything. For a long time. Brahma's day is hundreds of millions of years, billions of years. And his night is of equal duration. 12 hours of day, 12 hours of night. So to be left over at the end of Brahma's day, to have not achieved perfection, liberation, is the greatest catastrophe. It means you will have to sit dormant asleep in the sleeping body of Brahma for billions of years. And you will have no opportunity to do anything to improve your condition for all that time. Every living entity has to undergo birth and death. And a human being has to sit in his mother's womb for 7 months and then come out. But at the end of Brahma's day, we all have to sit in Brahma's body for billions of years before we're allowed to come out and resume the endeavors of our existence. So Narada himself, as part of his, Prabhupada says, his transcendental pastimes of Narada. Although it seems like he's suffering the same dormancy that all conditioned souls suffer at the end of Brahma's day, it's not. Prabhupada specifically says in his purport that Narada is pure devotee of the Lord, and the appearance, Narada as the son of Brahma is also a transcendent. The birth of Narada as the son of Brahma, which is what's going to happen to him after he sleeps through the whole night of Brahma, that he's woken and takes birth as Brahma's son. Prabhupada says this birth is also a transcendental pastime. His appearance and disappearance are practically on the same level as that of the Lord. The Lord and his devotees are therefore simultaneously one and different as spiritual entities. They belong to the same category of transcendence. So we have to understand, we should try to understand the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord's birth and activities. It's very important that we try to do so. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yoveti tatvataha chaktva deham punar janma naiti maviti sarajuna. Anyone who properly understands the spiritual nature, Krishna says, about my birth and activities will not himself have to take birth again in this material world. We're suffering from entanglement in the cycle of birth and death. We think we're suffering other things, but they're just symptomatic. You have a very serious imbalance in your bodily functioning. And as a result, you're experiencing symptoms of a disease. And you're concerned about the symptoms. You know, my legs hurt. But your legs hurt because you've been eating improperly and living improperly. And your body is now complaining about your bad living habits. You know, if you had lived more healthily, more naturally, your legs wouldn't be hurting now. We're focusing our attention on the symptoms and not understanding the root of the disease. So like that, we're looking at our karmic reactions and we're not understanding the real basis of our predicament. We're thinking that we have so many problems, but our real problems are enunciated, listed by Krishna. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, dukkha, dosha, anadosha. These are the real miseries of life. Not your painful leg or what various people are doing to you. It's the fact that you have to undergo birth, disease, old age and death. These are the real reasons to be in anxiety. So this is our problem. Krishna doesn't have that problem. The personality of Godhead and his liberated devotees. Liberated means free from the cycle of birth and death. The personality of Godhead is always liberated. And his pure devotees may have been at one time conditioned, some of them, but now they're all liberated forever. They will not have to suffer birth and death in the ordinary way again. The solution for us who are suffering in the recycling of birth and death is to simply understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's birth and activities. Krishna says that. One who simply understands how I take my birth and how I act in this world will not have to take a material birth again in this world, but will come to me. We don't have to become God. We have to understand God. We have to become God, not God, but God conscious. To become God is an impossible project, and it's very audacious and it's offensive to even attempt to do that, to become God yourself. But if you simply understand God, and to understand God is to love Him. You know, love of God is predicated on understanding of God. And if you actually understand God, you should begin to try to love Him. Bahunam jambana ante gyanavan mampapajate vasudeva sohamitis Mahatma Sudhu Labaha. Love of God is not a cheap thing. It cannot be imitated. in a way that will actually convince Krishna. You can fool the common people. You can fool yourself into thinking you actually have love of God. But you can't fool God. He knows what the real thing is, and he knows what the imitation is. So you cannot fool Krishna with a cheap imitation of love, a superficial show. The real thing is not easy to have and to manifest, real love of God. It requires a perfectly pure heart. But even the Gyanis, who are just Gyanis, they're not pure devotees. They know, they have knowledge, theoretical knowledge, something about God. But the successful Gyani, the one who's really fortunate and has actually followed the process of the cultivation of spiritual knowledge according to the Vedas, and followed it strictly and properly to the end of the process, after many, many lifetimes, he will finally come to the realization, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Krishna is everything. Philosophically, theoretically, he will finally come to that understanding. And a light will shine in his head. Oh, that I should dedicate my existence to the pleasure of Krishna. Then he becomes a devotee. A simple person who knows no philosophy and has no aptitude for it can also surrender to Krishna, just out of a simple heart, hearing from the right person. Anye tveva vajananto gyatvam yebhya upasate. Others, people who don't have any wisdom, don't have any book learning, don't have any degrees, but they hear from the right source, bona fide, authentic source of information. They also can begin to worship God. Simple hearted person, if he hears from a bona fide representative of Krishna, hears with faith, simply, honestly, then he can also become a sincere devotee of Krishna. Or a Gyani with a big brain and, you know, degrees and wisdom and all this, which are great burdens. Despite his intelligence, he can also become a devotee. If he avoids deception and pride, and after many lifetimes of puzzling over the mysteries of life, he may finally realize, oh, Vasudeva Sarvam, the personality of God, that is everything. And the purpose of our existence is to serve him for his pleasure. So the philosopher, although there's so many pitfalls to the philosophical life, if he's fortunate, he may come to this conclusion eventually. And he can also become a pure devotee. This is one way, at least. And the simple person, there's a simple process. For the person with a big brain, it's more complicated. But he also may eventually come to the realization that he might as well just surrender to Krishna and be his devotee. There's no sense trying to be anything else. But actually, all that needs to be understood is what's special about that personality of Godhead. How he also appears in this world. Krishna is so merciful that he comes to this world and displays himself to us. He doesn't have to do that. God can remain incognito. There's some mystery behind the cloud that no one ever sees, that the name of God cannot be uttered in the Jewish religion. The belief is that God has a name, but nobody knows that name. Even the word Jehovah is just a substitute for the secret name of God. And if anybody says the name of God, he'll be immediately destroyed. He'll be hit with lightning bolt. You know, not to be uttered, not to be known by anybody. No one has seen the face of God. No one has heard or uttered the name of God. This is their belief, that we're not fit to know God face to face or to know his name. Anyway, if someone wants to believe that, okay, we have a different conception. Krishna is revealing himself, showing his face, telling us what are his names, so many names he has. And his devotees are chanting his millions of countless names. We understand that Krishna does appear to us in this world. This is his mercy. He doesn't have to do that. He can remain the sublime transcendental mystery and refrain from revealing himself to anybody. But he chooses to. He does reveal his personal nature. He does show his face. He does let us know what his names are, what his address is, his mobile phone number, and everything else. He comes, he takes birth in this world in his countless avatars and performs his leelas, his pleasure pastimes. Not just his pleasure, but the pleasure of his devotees. God is the transcendental autocrat. Bhoktaram yoga tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram. Krishna commands, everyone's reverence and submission. Because he is the enjoyer of everybody's work. Yajna and tapas. All sacrifice that anybody does, like a man sacrifices to work for his family, he works hard, and by the time he retires, he may be worn out and may not survive for more than 3 years after he retires. Because he's worked so hard his life. Sacrificing for his family, the young yet. And tapas, austerity. But all the austerity and sacrifice, the enjoyer of all of it, Krishna claims that's him. Because he can claim that everyone is working for him, because he's the supreme proprietor of everything. There may be corporations that are owned by a large number of stockholders. There are other companies that are sole proprietorships. The total cosmos, spiritual and material, is a sole proprietorship. It's all owned by one person. So he can claim that everyone's working for him, because he's the absolute sole proprietor of everything. Isha vasyam idam sarvam yat kinchit jagat yam jagat. Everything that exists in all realms of existence is the property of God, and no one has a right, no one else has a right to usurp that claim to ownership. We can accept what God gives us, gift of God, the talents and the assets and abilities we have in our life, the necessities of life that are provided for us. They're gifts of God. We can accept them, we can enjoy them, but we cannot claim proprietorship over what is not ours. Tena tirtena bunjita mahvrida kashe swindano. Take what's given to you as your quota, but don't covet someone else's property. And everything is God's property. So Krishna is in a very awesome position, therefore. He is absolutely dominator of everything and everyone. But we don't have to fear him, because besides being those two things, he's a third thing also, according to his own words. Sudidam sarva bhutanam. Besides being terrible, he's also everyone's well-wishing friend. That third clause makes him tolerable. I could crush the whole universe between my fingers if I felt like it. But I don't do it, because I actually have everyone's happiness. This is my real interest. In mind, I have that everyone should be happy. Krishna is everyone's well-wishing friend, even his enemies. Therefore, he's tolerable, not terrible. And one of the main ways he shows his kindness is by showing himself, by appearing in this material world and exhibiting his pleasure pastimes, in which not only is he the tyrant who exploits and enjoys everyone else as his slaves, but no, he shares his pleasure with his devotees. He shares his pleasure. Pleasure pastimes not just for him, but for anybody who participates, or even anybody who simply hears and hears about and remembers these pastimes. That's why, one reason why, this literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, is so valuable and so enjoyable, because it is full of descriptions of the pastimes of the personality of God and his devotees. And to simply hear about these leelas, these pleasure activities of the Lord in association with his devotees, the Lord in his various forms and his various devotees' lives and appearances, and the Lord's lives and appearances, jagma karma chami divyam. Just by hearing about them, we become attracted to him, we learn how to understand him, we develop love for him, and we can join in these pleasure activities. That's the perfection of life. Narada has accomplished this. He has first of all gotten his perfection of becoming seriously attracted to hearing about Krishna. We read about that. As this goes back, we've been doing this gradually over the course of several months, but if you remember back, Narada, after receiving the Utchishta, the remnants from the meal of the sannyasis who were staying at his mother's home, his heart was purified by that prasad. And he developed attraction to hear from them about Krishna, about Krishna's pleasure pastimes, and about everything about Krishna, about the personality of Godhead. And he developed devotion. And now he's getting his Swarup Siddhi, Vastu Siddhi. You know, he's reaching the end of his existence on this earth, and he's entering the body of Brahma, who's going to be his father in the next life, and spending a long time here, billions of years. But then he's going to come out with the transcendental form of Narada as we know him, as the son of Brahma. Again, reclaiming his position as the eternal Parshada, or associate of Lord Narayana, who's constantly traveling and preaching throughout the material world, singing the glories of the Supreme Lord. Okay, so I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes.
Guruji, Narada Muni, we call him Devarshi. So is he actually a pure devotee of the Lord, or like we heard, he is going into the body of Brahma. If he's a pure devotee, then why at the time of devastation he's going into the body of Brahma? Why not spiritual abodes?
This was all a special pastime. Narada's apparent fall down. An eternal associate of the Lord doesn't actually fall down into material existence. But Narada did circumstantially seem to do that. Took birth as a low-class woman's son. And then gradually had to practice devotional service to recover his spiritual consciousness. But that's just, you know, what we call leela. It seems to be that he was an illusion, but it's just it's an external appearance only. And even the fact of his having to enter the body of Brahmana and sleep there for a long time and take birth again, that's all part of the pastime. Yeah, but because we can't fault Narada that there was anything wrong with him. It's just that for Krishna's pleasure, this pastime was enacted. Okay, did I answer?
have some questions, but they are not related to today's discussion. Can I
go ahead? Go ahead, yeah.
Probably one is that I was reading in Bhagavatam that generally people who worship Vishnu in any form, they also reach the Brahma Lok and they have to wait for the final devastation to happen and then enter the spiritual world.
Worship Vishnu? Okay. People who worship...
People who worship Vishnu,
yeah.
I mean not Krishna in his form but Vishnu form,
yes.
They also reach Brahma Lok,
yes.
And then they have to wait for the final devastation to happen to,
yes,
be able to finally enter the spiritual world. I mean the Golok Dham.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand correctly. I mean,
where did you read that?
I read in the Bhagavatam. I'm not sure.
Because
it works right now.
Sounds a little unusual that not, of course, not everybody who worships Vishnu has to go to the planet of Brahma. Many Vaishnavas get immediate liberation. There's different. So I don't. I have to see the context, the actual, you know, exact statement, where it fits in the discussion. Because as far as we understand, some devotees earn immediate liberation. They go directly. If they're worshipping Narayan or Vishnu, they'll go to Vaikuntha. If they're worshipping Radha Krishna, they'll go to Goloka Vrindavan. If they're worshipping Ramachandra, they'll go to Ayodhya. It depends on who they're worshipping. But if the worship is pure and unmotivated, the perfection should be achieved without delay. Other cases, there may be gradual perfection. Someone may have to go to a higher planet, maybe Brahma's planet, or maybe Indra's planet, and enjoy as a demigod for a whole lifetime of a demigod. And then after that, go higher. But the gradual perfection, that's in some cases, not all cases. So I don't think the statement was meant to say that all devotees of Vishnu have to go to Brahma's planet. Some, depending on their individual situation. Okay.
Next time we get the exact verse.
Yeah, get the verse and we can look at it. But I don't think it's a statement that all devotees of Vishnu have to go through that.
There is one more question that generally, from what a little I've read in Bhagavatam, whenever Krishna is revealing himself, he is coming in Narayana form, four-hand form. And sometimes he also comes as eight-armed form.
Yes.
But, I mean, obviously it's his own wish to reveal in two-armed form or four-armed form.
Yes.
But we still believe that Krishna is two-armed form. So how do we connect the two things? Like even when Krishna appears here.
The difference is a difference of mood. First of all, Narayana and Krishna are the same person. Okay, it's just, but they're exhibiting different moods. God, when he's in a certain mood, shows four arms. When he's in a different mood, he shows two arms. Especially in response to, his mood is always in response to the mood of the devotees around him. If devotees want to see God in a majestic form, he'll show four arms. Four arms means majesty and power, holding his weapons. Eight arms or ten arms, even more majesty. Two arms is pure madhurya, sweetness. He's not showing his majesty when he only has two arms. So the two-armed form of God is more rarely appreciated. People generally want to see God on his throne holding his weapons, with at least four arms. No, two-armed God is not appreciated as much. But those who have intimate love of God, they appreciate, first of all, the two-armed form. When Krishna was, for some reason, hiding from the gopis, he put on his four-armed form, showed himself as Narayana, to try to throw them off the path. And the gopis came by and saw him there, and they offered obeisances, Namo Narayanaya, have you seen Krishna? Where'd he go? They didn't recognize him. But the gopis weren't interested in Narayana. They're not. They're interested in seeing Krishna with his two arms. In general, the residents of Praja, Vrindavan, only know Krishna and they only appreciate him with his two arms. Because in that form, he's one of them. When God has more arms than we have, then he's something to be feared and worshipped. It's just a difference of mood. You know, but it's rare that someone can take God as an equal, or is it even as a dependent. That's a very rare form of love of God. So it's therefore God less commonly shows his two-armed form. The two-armed form of Govinda is only displayed once in every day of Brahma. For a short span of 125 years, Krishna was present on this earth. You know, otherwise, you know, that form is not seen on the earth. Of course, some of the other avatars also have two arms, some of them. Okay.
Yeah.
Something else?
You said when Brahma sleeps, then Jiva enters in his body.
Yes.
But do we enter with our subtle body, normal subtle body?
Yeah. Give up when we die, every time we die we give up the gross body. But we keep the subtle body that goes into our next body. So if we are still around at the end of Brahma's day, then in our subtle body we'll enter Brahma's body. Brahma doesn't have a gross body, he only has a subtle body anyway. Demigods don't have bodies made out of earth, water, fire. They have mental bodies. And Brahma is the most subtle of all the creatures. So his body is pure intelligence. So to enter Brahma's body, we have to enter in our subtle bodies, not in our gross body. The gross body just drops. That's what it says, Nyapata Pamsa Bhautaka. His body made of five gross elements simply collapsed. And then in his subtle body, Narada entered the body of Brahma.
When you say Brahma has a subtle body, so that means soul is different?
Oh yes. Brahma's body originally is the Mahatattva, the total intelligence of the universe, the Mahatattva. That's Brahma's first body.
And
so he has a material body. But it's a subtle material body.
And the Jiva's neck, but when Brahma will obey, will be decided on the desires of Jiva?
Yes, the two things, their karma and their vasanas. The residual traces of desire that have not been used up. And the credits and debits in their karmic account. That all is kept recorded, even during the annihilation period. And that will determine what particular kind of bodies each jiva gets at the beginning of the next day of Brahma. Otherwise, if everything was zeroed out, if everybody's account was equaled out, then why should different living entities take different births? Everyone should take the same birth if they all have the same zero karma. So it's not zero. Your karmic account remains intact even during the dormant period. And what you will be the next time around will be determined by what you were, basically what you were when you went to sleep before. It's like when we wake up in the morning, we're still the same person. Unless we suffered amnesia during the night, we have the same identity when we wake up in the morning. Because our karma hasn't changed much just by going to sleep. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, something else?
Yeah, Prabhuji.
Yes,
I was told that if we enter into Bhakti Yoga, like if we worship Krishna,
yes,
we go into a war with Maya.
Yes.
Durga Devi is in charge of Maya.
Yes.
So we are directly in war with Durga Devi.
Yes.
So does that mean that she won't help us in our path of Bhakti Yoga? Will she pray, will she cause some problems?
It's her responsibility to test us.
Okay.
She will try to cause problems because, not because she likes to, but because she's been told to by Krishna. She has to test our sincerity by enticing us with the same old Maya that we used to be enticed by. She's going to try again and see, do you really want to surrender to Krishna? You sure you wouldn't like to come back and enjoy this again? And it's her job to test. But when we finally show we're not interested in that same old Maya anymore, then she'll just offer her obeisances and step aside. You know, she'll leave us alone when we convince her that we won't be enticed by these material allurements. But it's her job to test us until we finally show that we're serious. That's her, she's Krishna's maidservant, and that's her job.
Okay, please stop.
Thank you.